Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and he has returned. Daniel Bryan is back. Not just in the WWE, not just the Total Bellas, not just the Total Divas, but also right here on Talk is Jericho. For the third time, he has returned to everything, including the WWE. He's telling us all about his miraculous return today. Find out what it took to get cleared to return to the ring. So long. It took him 3 years to get that clearance. And how did he really feel when he was initially forced to retire? He's also talking about his reality show, Total Bellas, that he films with his wife, Brie. He and Brie really did live in John Cena's house with Brie's sister, Nikki, and John, who have now since broken up. Huge Hollywood news. And the John's crazy rules are real. Daniel talks about dressing up for dinner, no shoes in the house, some of the other very strict rules that Cena asked them to follow. And Daniel also talks about what he planned to do if WWE did not clear him to get back in the ring, what he's going to do now that he has been cleared. He's got some interesting ideas for the Indies, New Japan, Ring of Honor, and of course, WWE. We talked about this. We filmed it. We recorded it when we were in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. And here it is, the return of Daniel Bryan to everything.
All right. So we are here in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, and we're just laughing about how we both slept all afternoon. And now we're going to have to deal with the jet lag that you get.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the 9:30 leave for the bus.
They changed it, didn't they?
Yeah, they changed it to 9:30. And you wouldn't know unless you checked your app. And so, like, as somebody who doesn't regularly check the app, I wouldn't have known had I not had an appearance earlier. Mm. And then, like, and then somebody said it, like, you know, I can't believe we have to be there at 9:30 in the morning. I'm like, 9:30 in the morning.
Because it was 11:30. I'm like, there's no way that's going to stick. You know, for a show like this, like, you know, it starts at 7. I was thinking 11:30 is pretty early or pretty late for us to be going there.
See, I thought it was early. I thought,
really?
Man, I can't believe we're leaving at 11:30 for
a 7 o'clock show, though.
For a 7 o'clock show, yeah.
But this is bigger than Mania, right?
I mean, kind of.
In a lot of ways.
In a lot of ways.
Is it exciting for you, though? Because it's like one of your first, I mean, you've only been officially back for like 2 or 3
this will
weeks
be my
or whatever
fourth,
it is.
This will be my fourth match.
Fourth match?
Yeah, this will be my fourth match back.
And what was your first match back?
WrestleMania was match number one.
Yeah.
Match number two was a singles match against AJ Styles on SmackDown. Mm-hmm. And then match number three was a tag match with AJ against Rusev Day.
Okay.
So, yeah, I've had...
So check this out. I don't know if you know this one. I told you I had a story to tell you. So a few weeks before WrestleMania, maybe 3 or 4 weeks, I get a call from Vince. And he's talking about Shane and his appendix, his diverticulitis, and he had an infection in his hand, and there was one other thing as well.
Staph
infection.
Yep.
Something had gone wrong.
Hernia.
That was it. And he goes, listen, like, we don't know if he can do Mania. And he had somehow looked or got someone to look at what my schedule was, and we had a Fozzy show that day. And originally I was like, well, why are we competing against WrestleMania? Why don't we just combine it? We'll do an earlier show, then let the venue buy WrestleMania and I'll watch WrestleMania with all the fans. Mm-hmm. So he's like, I know you're doing a Fozzy show, and then I know you got you're gonna watch WrestleMania with the fans. He goes, what would you think about coming to New Orleans if Shane can't do it? Do you know anything about this?
Yeah, so okay. I mean, so I don't. It was just, it's weird because we're in this stage now where they don't tell the boys anything. Right? So, like, they keep all the secrets from the boys because they're afraid that the boys are all talking to the dirt sheets and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just like, and so I asked, I said, when, because Shane called me and told me, he said, I'm in the hospital right now. I've got diverticulitis while I was in Antigua.
Yeah.
And then when they were giving me IVs, I got a staph infection from the IVs. And then I have this hernia that's right. like coming out of my stomach. And I'm just like, he's like, but don't worry, I'll be ready for mania. I was like, what? How?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
That's what I said.
So like, so I was on my way to TV. So I was actually going through security when he texted me and said, call me, and all that happened. And then, so then I talked to him and he said that. And so when I got to TV the next day, I was like, what are we going to do? Like,
yeah.
Certainly he can't be wrestling. And they said, well, he says he's wrestling, but we have a backup and we think it's a pretty good backup. Yeah. But I said, who is it? And they're like, we can't tell you.
Ah,
you can't tell me? Like, I'm in the match.
Right.
Shouldn't I know?
So you're just finding out now?
No, I mean, okay. I had assumed.
Gotcha.
I had kind of assumed that you were the person who makes the most sense.
Right.
With your history
right.
with Kevin and all that kind of stuff.
And it's funny though, because it's like we were looking, like we were Googling airport, because there's in Hampton Beach, New Hampshire, like the most out of the way place. So we were looking up like airports close to Hampton Beach and how long is the charter to get there. He said, okay, you can make it right on time and we'll give you a police escort and you'll basically have to get there and go right into the ring. I said, listen, I've got no problem with that. And I know that Brian has no problem with it. Kevin and Sammy, especially Sammy, are going to have heart attacks calling a WrestleMania match in the ring. I mean, right. Obviously, we would have think of some stuff beforehand, but right. like, I can do it. I don't right. have a problem. So can you.
Yeah.
We can do it now.
Right.
But I was like, Sammy is going to die of a freaking aneurysm if we do that. So anyways, that was the other. And then the same as you. And they finally, next week, Vince, like, I think Shane's going to do it. I'm like, how is he getting cleared?
Yeah.
With like, you know, is that even... Like, how do you do that?
That was one of the things I was thinking. And, you know, just Shane is just, he's fearless, right?
Of course. Well, he's one of us. I mean, yeah. We do the same,
well,
right?
And it's weird because he had that helicopter crash, right?
Right.
So he was in that helicopter crash. And the pilot was more shaken up than Shane was. And Shane was just like, okay.
Yeah.
He was keeping the pilot calm. And it's like one of those things where it's just like, what? Like,
yeah, exactly.
You're going down in a helicopter. Yeah. How do you not like...
He's a McMahon. He's not going out that way. But yeah, when I heard he's going to do it, I'm like, well, A, that's crazy. B, of course he can. I just didn't know like how they could get a doctor to clear him. But, you know, I guess when your dad owns the company, there's ways to make it work. But,
yeah.
But let's talk about your journey, man. I mean, it's been such a crazy story back and forth about how you're able to come back. Now, you never really gave up hope. Like, you always said, I'm coming back.
So I didn't always.
Okay.
So my last match was in 2015, and then they sent me to these neurologists, and all these neurologists had cleared me. And these were – none of these people were my doctors. They were doctors WWE would send me to. But then Dr. Maroon, he would just look like – because I kept a lot of things from him. And that's the thing is that, like, okay, your doctors need to be able to trust you, and they didn't trust me because I had lied to them. So, you know,
what
like,
kind of issues were you feeling?
So, I mean, I didn't have any issues. Mm. So the things were lying about past stuff. So I had four post-concussion seizures, which that's the big one. That's the big one where it was like, and Bree was there for one of them. And so she said, after we'd gotten married, she said, the next concussion you have, you have to tell somebody about it because, and by that point it hadn't happened in years, but she said, you have to ask him because she's concerned. I'm concerned too. We wanted to have a baby. So the WWE sends me to, the doctor in Phoenix. And so we tell him about the seizures. And I don't know why I was this naive in the sense of like, I thought, okay, I would tell him. And I just didn't think it would get back to the office, right? But then I also thought that when I told them about it, I thought my career would be kind of done. Mm-hmm. I was like, if they find out about this, they're not.
Right.
But he said it's actually because of the type of seizures that you have. It's like he actually cleared me. He said your brain functions so well, and these were isolated incidents with a particular set of circumstances, and so. So he had cleared me, but then, you know, imagine you're Dr. Maroon, you're the head of WWE Medical, and you've done it, and then all of a sudden you get this report from about one of the talents talking about seizures, post-concussion seizures, and then, you know, it's hard to regain trust after that.
Sure.
So, sure. So then it's been like I wasn't having any issues. I felt great, and I think that was one of the problems. And then in February of 2016, I had taken. So because I was trying, I was going and doing all this weird stuff, trying to get cleared, right? So it's like what? So I had heard about this certain type of testing that isn't necessarily used for diagnosis, but it's like that was used in MMA athletes and stuff like that. And so I was going and doing that and all these different types of stuff. And so, but I had been cleared by Dr. Cardenas, who was at Barrows Neurological, who's one of the best in the country. I had been cleared by UCLA at that point, a team of doctors at UCLA, but they still wouldn't clear me in for valid reasons, because more so because I think of the trust thing, and just if something happens, people are going to say, how did you clear this guy with this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so so I was going and do, like oh, okay, well, I heard of this thing out in New York State, and so they hooked my brain up to all this EEG stuff and then had me do reflex testing. Well, what it showed is that my reflexes are a little slow in the temporal parietal region of my brain. But when you read the report, what it says is it says slowing in the temporal parietal region of the brain seems to indicate a small acute lesion or subacute lesion in the temporal parietal region of the brain. I'm like, I have a lesion in my brain? And it's like, you know, and I at this point, I was trying to be very forthcoming and honest with everybody about everything that I was doing, because that was one of the setbacks.
You had to.
Right. And so when I got that report, I was like, oh. And Vincent asked me, he said, when you get this report back, let me know. Because he was kind of starting to almost be on my side a little bit. Like, all these doctors had cleared me. And so, well, let me know what the New York doctors say. And then, you know, yada, yada. So I called him and I told him. And he's like, well, it's good that we know now. And then, like, 2 days later, he called me and said, hey, I want you to retire in Seattle. And so it's like,
wow.
Yeah. And then, so that was 2 days later. He called and told me he'd like me to retire in Seattle, which was 2 days from the day that he called me. And so, but at that point I was like, if I do have what most people, when you think of a lesion, you think of like a cut.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I have a cut on my brain, I always thought I don't want to wrestle if it's bad for me. Like if I shouldn't be wrestling,
yeah,
I don't want to wrestle.
I'm not going to tough through it or whatever. Yeah.
And so, so that made all the sense in the world to me. And then I retired, and it got like a bunch of, I mean.
Well, let's talk about that night, though, because I remember I was there in Seattle when you did that speech. It's one of the, I mean, greatest, in a sad way, moments in Raw history. Was that just all completely from the heart? Did you actually have someone write stuff for you? Did you write it all yourself?
No, so I wrote it all myself, but I didn't necessarily write it. I was trying to formulate what I wanted to say, because how I felt was not how I wanted to present myself if that was going to be my last, if that was my last time hurrah, talking whatever, about it. Yeah. I don't want to talk about my, how I really felt was devastated.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to make it about being devastated. I wanted to think about, I wanted to present it as, because if my career had ended then, the way I thought it was, where it was like, maybe I shouldn't wrestle anymore. I'm very grateful for the career that I had, like 16 years being able to do this, like wrestling all over the world. And like, it's a cool job. Like, I haven't had to have a real job since I worked at a video store / tanning salon in like 2001. Like, kids today don't even know what video stores are, right? You know, like, and it's just a small town video store with a tanning salon in it, which just seems like an absurd concept. You're and it's right. Like, that was my last real job. And besides that, all I've done is this really fun thing that we get to do and go around the world. Yeah. And so it's just like getting to meet awesome people and doing cool stuff. And so that's how I wanted to present it. And I tried to make myself feel that. And a lot of times I did, but there were also times where it's just like devastating. And I tried to push that part of my mindset back and focus on the gratitude part. So that's why in the when I talked about it, I had to keep saying gratitude to focus myself,
right?
To remind myself of how lucky I am. So that was kind of that.
So what were you going to do, like, in your mind? Because like, you thought you had the lesion, which to me you said, God, to me it seems like a sore.
Uh-huh.
Or like some kind of, like, some kind of a scarring on your brain or something. So did you have an idea of, like, what do I do now? Because I remember they were going to do, like, a bunch of Daniel Bryan tribute shows with you there, and you just said no way.
Well, what ended up happening, so we were filming, we started filming the first season of Total Bellas. So then they... Bree and I are living in John's house, and Bree's on the road still full time. There's all these cameras around us, right?
Was that a shoot? Did you really live in John's house?
Yeah.
With all these weird rules and stuff?
Yeah. And so, like, we were there, and it was, like, super high stress. And it was also, like, when you're going through something challenging like that, you kind of, I would want to be around my friends and family.
Yeah.
And not to say that I don't love Bree's family, because I do.
Right.
But those aren't the people that I'm closest to, that I need
yours. Yeah.
Yeah. I need to be around my family. Mm. Right. And like, I literally just had this mental breakdown where I was just lost it. And so I ended up leaving. Like I just left.
In the middle of the show?
In the middle of the show.
What was worse, the fact you couldn't wrestle, or the fact that Johnny Ace is now your dad?
I missed their wedding. I missed their wedding because of my mental breakdown.
Okay. And so you just walked out.
They were going to do Kathy, Bree's mom's bachelorette party that day. And I just
couldn't take it.
I couldn't do it anymore. And I left. And so, I went back to Phoenix, but then I went back to Washington. There, I kind of like mentally, emotionally healed for a little bit. And then I felt a lot better. And then I came up with a plan. I was going to go back to college. I had signed up for this sustainability course. Like there's a thing called permaculture, which is sustainable agriculture kind of. But it's like one of the best permaculture courses in the country is up on Orcas Island in Washington State, and I had signed up for that. And so like, and then I had been accepted into ASU. I'd actually gotten a scholarship, which is strange because I didn't realize that your grades kind of transfer, even though the last time I went to college was like 2006. I mean, because of your grades and everything, you get a scholarship of this amount ASU, biology and ecology and that sort of thing. So that was my plan. Then they called me to do the GM thing. And so they had asked me a little bit before, they had said, when they were doing the Cruiserweight Classic, they said, do you want to come be a commentator for it? I know that you just retired, and we don't know if you want to be around it. And this was Hunter, and we don't know if you want to be around it, but just throwing it out there, we think you'd be great for it. I said, I'd love to do that. That sounds like a lot of fun. Nobody asked me about being GM. And so it was just like, it threw this monkey wrench in all of these plans that I had to get away from wrestling. So I'm going to rewind a little bit. After I had retired, the doctor in Phoenix from Barrett's Neurological, Dr. Cardenas, he called me and he said, what happened? Like, how you retired? I mean, like, your brain is fine. Like, there's... Mm. And I said, well, I got this report and I sent it over to
him.
About the lesion. And he said, so this is not... A lesion in medical terms is not what you're thinking a lesion is. A lesion just means... something is causing a slowing reaction in your brain. And because they don't know what it is, they're calling it a lesion. But he said, but when you look at this, it's not actually slow. It depends on who you're comparing it to. Mm. If you're comparing it to the general population, it's normal. Mm. But if you're comparing it to like MMA athletes or people like that who need fast reflexes, then it's slow. It's slower than you would expect of a professional athlete. But as you know, like, I don't need to have professional athletes' reflexes, right? And so when he explained that to me, I was just like, oh, man, is this just like a big mistake and all this kind of stuff, you know? So anyways, but I had accepted kind of the decision until they brought me back as GM, and then I just have to be around it every week. And then because of... I'm still doing a decent amount of traveling with that.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm having to sit like at ringside for matches. And it's just like...
Did that hurt?
It hurt. And it was also just like, what am I doing? Mm. Like, because... And this is the part of me that is very like, what a sissy I am. As far as like lots of people go to their jobs that they don't like and make way less money than me being the GM of SmackDown. But I could not get out of this mental space of being like, gosh, do I hate
See, I understand
here.
Though because it was taken away from you.
Yeah,
that's why.
Right, and so, it, like, I literally disliked going to work every week. Oh, and wow. Anytime, like, there would be times where I'd fly in and I'd get the script for the show, and if I just had like a backstage, I'd try to like, and you know how hard it is to try to get stuff filmed before the show. Yeah. I would push as many people as I could to be like, hey, let's get and try to just leave that night just
so you could go, yeah,
just so I could get out of there, yeah. You know, and so that was kind of that's when I really started to like, okay, I'm not gonna accept this anymore, I'm gonna come back. and that's what it is,
because of what the doctor told you about your brain is technically okay.
Yes, and not only that, so this is what he said. He said, the problem with, because I went and did some experimental stuff and stuff that's not approved by the FDA, he said, the problem with doing that stuff, and this is when he talked to me recently, because they sent me to him again, so they sent me to a ton more doctors before they would clear me here. And so he said, this is the thing, like, it was awesome, like, as far as self-knowledge, that you're willing to go and try these things. The problem with doing that is none of these things are FDA approved. So even if that test were to say, yeah, your brain is great, it doesn't mean anything to the other people because they're not FDA approved.
Right.
And then if it flags you for something, even it may not be valid because it's not FDA approved. So it's like, and not to say that the I don't know, and I don't even know if I'm saying it right, because FDA is the Food and Drug Administration, so maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know. Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah. And so so it's not approved stuff, so you doing it is good for your own self-knowledge, but it doesn't help you get cleared.
Yeah.
So, like, I did 80-plus hyperbaric oxygen therapy treatments. Which,
what is that?
So you sit in this tank, and it's goes to a really high pressure, and then you have these and then it's filled with oxygen, and the idea, I'm gonna mess this up, but the idea is that you get more oxygen and your brain receives more oxygen for healing. But a lot of athletes do it just to heal their body in general.
So is your head above the
no,
tank?
No. I'm in
like,
I'm
like
in
a sauna or something.
No, I'm in a tank.
Oh, tank.
So
okay.
I'm in a miniature submarine. And so So you go in there and it pumps in all this oxygen into your brain. And I was working with the Joe Namath Institute in Florida.
Right, just Joe Namath thing, right?
Yeah, and so, but again, so they're doing stuff to get, like, there's all this testing going on throughout the United States with the hyperbaric oxygen therapy stuff, and they're in one of the trials with that, but it's not approved. So it's like, when I talked to one of the doctors about it, who cleared me, like, when I said, and I've completed over 80 hyperbaric oxygen. Now, you have to understand, each one of these sessions is like an hour and a half long, and it's 45 minutes from my house. So I go 45 minutes, I'm there for an hour and a half, then another 45 minutes back. So it's like a 3-hour investment. A lot of times I was going twice a day.
You're putting your time in.
Yeah, I was putting my time in. And so when I said, you know, I've done over 80 hyperbaric oxygen therapy treatments, he laughed at me. You know, like, that isn't proven to work. And I was it's just like, you know, like, I felt benefits from it, but...
So how was it supposed to work? It gives you more oxygen, which helps your brain function better?
Yeah, which helps your brain function better. And my brain... The thing was is that my brain didn't need to function better to perform better on these tests that they... But I was trying to do everything I could to just show, hey, I'm good to go.
Right.
So I was going above, I was trying to go above and beyond. Dr. Cardenas, the guy at Barrows Neurological, he said, I really felt like we dotted our I's and crossed our T's in 2015 when he saw me. He said, but you've really like made a big scratch above the I and really slashed across the T to make sure that everything is like
right.
good. So,
right.
so yeah, so that's kind of.
So how were you able to finally convince Dr. Maroon and the WWE that you were okay to come back?
So, gosh, I mean, I had a conversation with Vince, and I had pushed to him. He had asked me all these questions. Well, what happens if you get another concussion? Or what happens if this? Or what happens if that? And I had kind of answers for him, and I laid it out. And so, like, I would have a different concussion protocol than everybody else. So, like, and this is one of my pitches to him is that, you know, one of the things is that, and this happens in every sport, hockey, football, soccer, everything. When guys, they get a concussion and a trainer goes over to them and goes, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. Do you have a concussion? No, I'm fine. That's everybody,
right.
Myself included, mm-hmm. right? So to stop that, because that's been an issue with me before, is that I'd literally, like, if I'd had a concussion, I'd just walk off and they'd... Luke Harper has a story from Providence, Rhode Island, which was my second to last concussion. Like, they couldn't... I kept wandering off around the building. I was looking for my filtered water bottle, and like they couldn't keep track of me. The show was over. It'd been over for a long time, and then there I am, just wandering around the building. And so, but my thing was is that, okay, after every match, this is my proposal. I have to go to the trainer's room. They do all the checks and all that kind of stuff. And if I don't do it, maybe there's a fine or there's something like that. So, you know, after every match I get checked, which they've actually instituted. That's what's happening now.
Wow.
I get checked after, like, I not even thanking your opponents or anything like that. Like WrestleMania, I walk straight through Gorilla. No thank yous to anybody. Straight to the doctors. And then I get checked.
What do they do?
So they do all, like, just kind of basic neurological stuff, checking to make sure that
eyes and everything. Yeah.
And so that's, and we're revising that as we go because it's new for them too. Mm-hmm. But so that was my thing to Vince, and then so he said, "Well, type that up, put that in an email to Dr. Maroon, and say this." And Dr. Maroon, I give Dr. Maroon a lot of credit because it's hard to reverse your opinion when you're such a well-respected person. After,
especially when you became such a hot button topic.
Yeah.
That's why I thought, like, I didn't know, like, if you never got cleared, it would be because you've become such a name that if anything ever happened, it's, see, we right. told you,
right.
we told you, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so I have a lot of respect for Dr. Maroon because he was willing to say, like, okay, my opinion might not be right on this. And he sent me to, he said, these are the three neurologists that I think are the best neurologists. And so he sent me to those three neurologists, and then I ended up having to go be sent to a couple more. But he didn't send me to neurologist because he could have easily sent me to neurologist that would have just confirmed his opinion. He could have sent me to just somebody who would have said, well, I don't know, due to your history or whatever it is. But he sent me to the people who are doing the latest, that have all the most best recent concussion research. Those are the people that he sent me to. And so he didn't want just somebody, a layup who confirms his own opinion. He wanted to get to the right answer. Mm-hmm. And so I have a lot of respect for him for that. And that at the end of the day, it's not Dr. Cardenas, it's not Dr. Kutcher in Michigan, who was awesome. I saw him. It wasn't UCLA. It wasn't the other neurologist. If I get hurt, it doesn't go to those people. It goes to Dr. Maroon,
right? Because exactly.
He's the head of medical.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of respect for him for that. But that was kind of the beginning of the process. And then it was just like, okay, we're gonna send you this person. We're gonna send you this person. We're gonna send you this person. Okay, now if we do clear to wrestle, what's that gonna look like? You know, like all that kind of stuff. What's your schedule gonna be like? Turns out we haven't really talked about the schedule much, and they've just thrown me into live events. And so now I'm on that full European tour, and, like, you know, so back to the full-time
stuff.
Well,
I love it, too. They're protecting you, too, by giving you the most painful move I've ever taken, the powerbomb into the apron.
Oh.
I was like, well, that's a good way to come back.
Well, so the thing...
Could have given you a few hip tosses first.
Yeah, so the idea was... I mean, the idea is, if you're cleared, you're cleared, right?
And full bore, yeah.
And that's... I mean, it's one thing if I had a back and neck injury or something like that, but as far as I know, Kevin's never hurt anybody on that.
Oh, no. Yeah. I mean, it's not maliciously. It just hurts because of the way you bump on it.
It just hurts.
You know, it just the hurts. Way it is. Yeah, it's funny because I took it the first time in Las Vegas. We did the Festival of Friendship.
Uh-huh.
And he's telling me about it. I was like, yeah, I mean, I got to be out for 3 weeks. What a great way to put me out. And he gave it to me. And I, like, oh, my gosh. I was just like, and then at Mania, it's like, wow. Hit me with it again, roll me in and pin me. And it was like that second when I reached, I turned, I was like, I can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
Because I'll hurt myself by, like, not taking it, even if there's any proper way to take it anyway. So when I saw you take it, I was like, oh.
Yeah.
right back in.
Yeah.
When did you find out that you were cleared?
Literally so they made the announcement on the Tuesday. I found out at 9:30 p.m. Monday night, the night before. Wow. And And apparently it was still kind of being talked about Tuesday morning as far as whether or not they were actually going to, like, I had got Dr. Maroon, like, it made me cry. He had, like, so he had already left. I was in Bahrain and Abu Dhabi doing the Special Olympics and stuff.
Oh,
flew back to Dallas, which is where the show was. And then they'd call me like the day before, hey, you need to go to Pittsburgh. Okay. So I go to Dallas, go to Pittsburgh, land at 7, go straight to Dr. Moon's office. 4 doctors there waiting for me, going through all these like tests and scans and talking to me and all this kind of stuff. And then at 9:30 at night, Dr. Moon at that point had already left, but he left me a sheet of paper and it said, it's been a long time, finally you're cleared. I just, oh, wow. I cried. Yeah.
How did that feel?
I was like, it was kind of, I was preparing myself to not be cleared, right? I just, when Dr. Maroon had sent me to 3 doctors, when they had sent me to 3 doctors, and then they were like, okay, now go to another doctor, and now go to another doctor, I was just kind of like,
come on, guys.
Yeah, I mean, I was just like, oh, like, he's now, in hindsight, I see it as he's just protecting himself, right? As far as like, okay, I'll mm-hmm. do, but for me, in the moment, it's feeling like they're just going to send me to doctors until somebody says no. Right. And so, it was this big, like, I cried. I called Bree. She cried, and she's not a big crier. And it's like, because we've been going through this together, mm-hmm. you know, like she, it's funny. We talked about it because we just had our 4-year wedding anniversary. In the 4 years that we've been married, I've only wrestled during that time for about 4 months.
Right.
Because I had my neck surgery. I was out, came back. I was on the road for 4 months, and then I had the concussion thing and hadn't wrestled since. And
it's so amazing. You had that big main event at WrestleMania where you won the title.
Yep.
Then you got hurt.
Yep.
Then you came back, won another title.
Yep.
Then you got hurt.
Yep.
It was just like this horrible things of one thing after another happening.
Yeah.
When you were thinking about it, when you thought that Maroon might not clear you, or they might just keep sending you until someone said no, because I know you were telling me, and it's public knowledge, that your contract is up very soon.
September 1st.
September 1st. Were you about to go?
Yes.
And
100%. Yeah. So like, I had, at that point I was just like, you know what? I'm going to wrestle. Like, I love to wrestle. Like it's just a part of me. Right. And not only that, I didn't feel like I got a satisfying conclusion. Mm-hmm. Right. I wasn't ready to be done. It's interesting because had I just kept wrestling, when I got cleared in 2015, like if 2015, a couple weeks after that concussion, and they put me back in there and I wrestle, by now I might be ready to be like, okay, I'm ready to be done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But because it was taken away, now I'm just like, I was ready to go to, I wanted to go to kind of New Japan, Ring of Honor, and CMLL. Mm-hmm. Like I've done a little bit in Mexico, but I always wanted to do, even though there's no money there, like in comparison,
sure.
I wanted to do like mask and hair matches and all that kind of stuff. And so
I think you probably could have done some decent business there because there is money there. And plus with you coming in with your name value, you know, like I started my career in Mexico, so I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I've had mask matches and hair matches in Arena Mexico, just being in there. And it's part of the journey.
Yeah. Well, and you know, because I was trying to research, like, okay, how would I wrestle if I come back? Because I need to wrestle kind of a safer style. Austin had actually gotten on me about that when I came back from my neck surgery. Mm. He was like, he had given me a call. It was actually, it's crazy because, like, 1996, when he did the Austin 316 promo, I was still in high school, right? Yeah. Like, I'm just a fan, right? Yeah. And then the first time he calls, he's like, whoa, I just got called by Steve
Always.
Austin. Yeah, yeah.
And the thing with Steve is he's not much of a texter. He's still the last guy I still talk to on the phone.
Yes, absolutely.
He only wants to call. Yeah,
yeah. And so he called, but he had called me and he's like, you know, it's not my place to tell you this, but I think I should. And we talked for about 45 minutes about the need to change my style and all that kind of stuff. And so I was looking at, okay, what's the best way to do it? Because, you know, he's talking about Jerry Lawler, and I love watching Jerry Lawler wrestle, but you can't necessarily translate Jerry Lawler style to WWE now, mm-hmm. and especially with the way things are. And so, like, mixing things, and who are the guys? Like, Negro Casas is still awesome.
And he's like, 10 years older than me, so he's 57.
Yeah, so
yeah, he's still 50, awesome.
Still awesome. Yeah. And still doing his thing. And so it's like, you know, so that kind of stuff. And I'd gotten really deep into this lucha lore, right? Like I'd gotten into this deep 80s lucha thing where I was just like trying to find as much 80s lucha as I could on YouTube, which is just weird. You know, there's so many little rabbit holes to go
it's
down
so
into.
It's so different from today's lucha. Too.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
The high flyer was like Super Astro who did like yeah. a diving headbutt or something.
Yeah. yeah. And so like, and so I just did this deep dive into 80s lucha. And so I was just like, man. And then I became obsessed with like, I want to do mask and hair matches. I want to go around and collect all these masks. And then whoever their big mask guy is, then he'll take my hair yeah, and
hair
maybe
out.
My, yeah, my beard too, and all yeah. that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah. So
you wanted to do that. And then obviously now with the Ring of Honor New Japan, you look at yeah. guys like Young Bucks and Kenny and yeah. Cody. I mean, they're ruling the world,
yeah.
you know, outside of here. And I could see you obviously would have fit in there in one day if you
yeah.
would be.
Well, and one of the things that I thought is one of the things that, so Bullet Club especially is very hot, right? But they need somebody to go against, mm-hmm. right? And so it's like as far as something that would draw money and interest and bring independent wrestling to another level, like I thought that's it. And then you came in and just did it. And so it's just like without the, but I mean like, but it's true. Like the right. New Japan's, like there was more interest in the New Japan Dome show
absolutely.
Ever before in America because all of a sudden, okay, you've got the Bullet Club who's super hot, Kenny Omega who's super hot, and then now you've got Chris Jericho who's in it too. And now it's like, holy cow, this match.
Right.
You know, so it's like, that's what I was thinking as far as like a long-term thing that could we could do that for a couple of years, right?
It opens up like a dozen dream matches.
Yeah.
Just so, one guy coming in
yeah.
can open up, like you said, like months and years of programming.
Yeah.
Right?
So.
And because you had worked for Ring of Honor before.
Yes.
But now to go back there, they're pretty hot. Like independent wrestling is so hot right now.
Yeah.
Probably more than maybe ever since maybe the 80s or something.
Yeah. And you know, it's crazy because there's the availability thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting. I read a lot, like mm-hmm. just a lot. And so reading, so there's no show like, I want to say like the Johnny Carson show that everybody watches,
right.
right? Everybody across society watches this one show. You have people who are like, I love Breaking Bad, or you have people who are like, I like Game of Thrones or whatever it is, and not everything, but these people who get into it, they get deep into it.
Right.
And now the people who are deep into, there's so many people who are, there's less general fans maybe of pro wrestling in the United States, but there's more deep
yes.
fans yeah. than there ever have been before. And the ability to, like if you were a wrestling nerd like I was in high school who just couldn't see enough wrestling, well, actually, you can't, there's an endless amount of wrestling for you to
yeah.
watch.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so yeah. So, I mean, it's created all these new hardcore fans who are deep into professional wrestling and follow things like Ring of Honor or Pro Wrestling Guerrilla or follow the stuff in Japan or follow what's going on in Mexico and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it's really neat.
Were you watching a lot of the stuff?
No.
Yeah.
So
I'm the same.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm interested.
So when I did the Tokyo Dome show, there's a lot of people saying like, you know, wrestling fans, God bless, but how's Jericho going to keep up with Kenny Omega? And how's he going to do it? And it's like, I don't have to keep up with anybody because we're going to do the match my way. Obviously, I know what Kenny can do and his style, but it's like I'm not going to go in there and start taking, you know, dragon suplexes off the top rope into the ring. Like you mentioned, like you're watching the style of everybody's matches. It's like the style is good wrestling is good wrestling. That's
yeah,
the style.
Absolutely.
You know, and I was laughing about that when people were like, oh my God, it's the best match of Jericho's career and whatever. Like, whether you think so or not, the fact that anybody even doubted me or would doubt you on if you can do a certain style, of course we can. This is what we do.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And so, and you know, it's always interesting to me because I think the difference in styles is actually what makes things interesting. If
right.
you just have the same people around all the time, just working the same kind of style, like you coming in makes it, what is this going to be? It's going to be,
exactly.
it's going to be different, you know?
Right.
So I always think that that's unique and interesting in any form of entertainment. So
it's interesting too because I've been working here for 17 years after, you know, working around the world like you did and going to New Japan, just seeing like the big difference in, like, you know, we talk about WWE style. Basically what WWE style is, knowing how to put on a proper match. And why I say that is like there's a lot of stuff going on in the New Japan style where it's like very indie-rific.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of cheap shots in front of the ref and just stuff like that. Stuff that we would never do.
Right.
Because it just doesn't make sense.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The guy will pull out a chair and hit somebody right in front of red shoes. I'm like, that's a DQ.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, why is that not a DQ?
Yeah.
You know, and so those, that's why, like, for our match, we had it as a no DQ match because I didn't want to have those bad habits that they have there.
Right.
And not saying that, I mean, it's just the Japanese way.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like working here.
Right.
We really do learn a lot about that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, but I think there's inherent flaws in any style because once you get involved in kind of the same people running things for the same time, they have a certain viewpoint on it that outsiders will probably look at and be like, hey, wait a second. Why is this happening? Or why is that happening? And the same thing with New Japan or with Lucha. Some people watch Lucha and they're like, I don't get it. Yeah. And that was me for the longest time. I'd watch it.
That doesn't make any sense either.
Yeah, yeah.
Start watching it.
Yeah, I don't get it. And then you start to understand, oh, this is what this is, and this is what that is, or whatever it is, and this is just the rules. This is how it operates. So whether it's right or wrong, it doesn't matter.
It's very strange how every fall, whenever one guy loses, the other two lose really quickly, right?
Yeah.
It's a very strange thing.
Hey, this is Chris Jericho inviting you to the first ever Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Picture this: rock and roll, wrestling, comedy, live podcasting, all on the open ocean from October 27th to the 31st, 2018, from Miami to Nassau. I'm bringing Hall of Fame wrestlers, some of the greatest rock and roll bands on the planet, and putting the first wrestling ring on a cruise ship ever. Don't be a stupid idiot. Make the list. Check us out at ChrisJerichoCruise.com.
You mentioned Cody, and you guys used to actually travel together.
Yeah.
What do you think of him now in comparison to when he was here? And did he talk to you before he left and ask your advice at all? Or?
So I don't remember if we talked much before. He didn't. I don't think he necessarily asked my advice, but I think he's done such a great job as far as like he's gone out and, you know, he was willing to work hard, and he was also willing to not. He didn't jack up his price, right? He wasn't like, he was like, I want to work. What's a price that can get me booked every weekend, three shows a week every weekend? Because I want to prove to everybody that I'm better than what WWE made me.
Yeah.
As opposed to a lot of people who's like, oh, well, I was a WWE guy. So,
$5,000 a show.
Yeah, man. $5,000 a show. It's like, well, most promoters can't afford that, you know? And so and he's just been smart because he's so different, and he's so different from the independent wrestlers that are known as independent wrestlers, right? And that's what makes him awesome and what makes it unique, and like it's a difference in style. So, and he brings so much. I don't watch it. I've only watched a couple episodes, but the Young Bucks YouTube show, that he's so good in that, and it's so funny, and he's
being
like
the elite,
yeah
he's really come into his own. Like the last time I saw him, I was like, dude, you are now a bona fide main eventer.
Yeah,
you know, like there's no doubt. And he wasn't here.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think a lot of guys should take notice of. You know, I mean, some guys have. I mean, Ryback, he left and nothing really happened or Swagger, but Cody's a good example of somebody who left on his own and really showed what he could do.
Well, and I think it's also the attitude that you have when you leave. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you want out of leaving? Like, because he left because he wanted to leave. He didn't leave because his contract was up or they fired him or anything like that. He left because, you know what? I am better than what they're giving me. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go out and prove it.
Did you used to ride with Ryback as well?
Oh yeah.
Do you have some road stories from you guys?
I mean, you know, there's very few road stories that I feel comfortable sharing, just because it was a lot of. Ryback is a very funny character. I love him. He's such a nice human being, but he's so easy to rile up. There's a ton of stories that I can't, but it's just the daily stuff, you know, it's the daily stuff that you just constantly giving a guy a hard time and all that kind of stuff. And then he explodes.
Such a unique individual too, with his positive thinking, all that stuff is easy to get under his skin.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You would think with being such a positive thinker, and I would tell him this all the time, I think with you thinking so positively and just like, okay, you know, and that he was big into The Secret, right? So it's like things are supposed to happen how they're supposed to happen and all this kind of stuff, that you would just be okay with everything that happens. But that's not how it is. It's just, you know. So
one of the rumors before you were cleared was that they were going to have you do All In. big show that they're doing.
So I don't even know. So All In, they didn't talk to me about it. Well, Cody had kind of texted me. He didn't text me when they announced the date of the show. When they announced the date of the show, I don't think it would have been possible because the date of the show is because they announced that well before I was cleared. And the date of the show is actually the day that my contract expires. And so it's like,
does that mean you could do it?
I don't know. I would have to get a lawyer to see.
I guess
like
August 31st at midnight, it expires, or September 1st at midnight.
Yeah. I wonder how that works. Yeah, one or the other.
One of the legalese words. Well, with those Ring of Honor shows, they're so freaking long anyway.
Right, that's the thing.
They probably could have done that.
You could have had me come out in a full body suit with a mask, and then at midnight, I get unmasked.
Yes,
yeah.
So what? Now that you're back, and did you feel anything like, you know, because if you're gone for a while, some guys you can train every day and do all the cardio in the world, but when you get back in there, it's a different story. For me, I had that dome match. I hadn't worked in 7 months. I was fine. I went 40 minutes or whatever, no problem at all. Was it the same for you?
Yeah. And I had no problem at all. The one time that I got tired at WrestleMania when I'm doing these drop kicks corner to corner like 5 times in a row, I was like, oh man, I'm tired. Take a breath. Okay, I'm good. And then I was actually kind of concerned because then I did an AJ Styles singles match on SmackDown. I was like, oh man, like 15 minutes total. It's about 12 minutes of TV time. And it's like, I don't know cardio wise if I'm going to be up for this. But turns out I wasn't tired at all. Yeah. And it's like, but I've also, it's crazy because I've also lost a significant amount of weight. Mm. And I was thinking, because I honestly thought WWE wasn't going to clear me. So I was like, it's okay if I'm 185 pounds on the independents in Japan. Whereas like when I was in WWE, I was always like in between 195 and 205, right? And so I had, I just feels better on my joints being lighter and all that kind of stuff. And then it's like, oh, you're clear. And I'm like, oh, shoot, I'm really small.
So, it doesn't really matter though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it matters less now. But so what I honestly do think though, that it does matter to the general audience. And I'm not talking about the hardcore wrestling fans. I'm talking about like the casual person who turns on the television. You watch Braun Strowman, right? And if you're even the hardcore fans like him because he's so different, because he's this big monster, like that sort of thing. But I think one of the things that people need to believe is that, like, because my big match that I want to do, and who knows if it'll ever happen because of what he's doing, but I want to wrestle Brock, right? But you need to look a certain way to be able, like, you need to be at least AJ, like when AJ Styles wrestled Brock, and that's borderline, you need to be believable. Like, as much as I like, I don't know if we got to it before the thing cut out, but as much as I like Zack Sabre Jr., if Zack Sabre Jr. were wrestling Brock, I wouldn't buy it.
Except Brock would snap him in two.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's thin guy.
Yeah.
But then you look back to when Eddie worked with Brock, one of the best matches Brock maybe ever had.
Yeah.
But Eddie was always pretty
good. Yeah, he always looked great.
Yeah.
So I was more concerned about that than kind of anything else, and trying to get gear on such short notice because it was just like, because I didn't have, we're in San Diego, our gear, who knows where my gear is? It's somewhere, you know, I'd given some to WWE for their stuff. And so it's like, do I have any gear? Oh, I can kind of throw some stuff together, but
right. Did you have to get any new boots or anything? Or did you have the boots?
No, I just got some amateur wrestling shoes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Some camouflage amateur wrestling shoes that I got at a Dick's Sporting Goods for $35.
If people only knew, right?
Yeah.
Like multi-million dollar athletes with, like, you know, holes in the bottom of our boots and tape holding the kick pads on and everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I think I texted you about this. I was watching something you just did, watching your first match in WWE ever, which was against me.
Yeah.
The NXT one. And you kind of were watching it and commentating as it went. It was pretty fun to watch because I had forgotten. I mean, I remember that we had it, but I'd never watched it.
Yeah.
So to watch it back was really cool. It's hard to believe it was 8 years ago, nine years ago.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Like,
yeah. 2010. Yeah. So they did that as part of the Bella Twins YouTube channel. Like, all of a sudden they're filming us at our house. I feel like I never stop being filmed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just between the reality shows and the YouTube shows and then WWE doing stuff. It's just like I'm constantly always on camera or whatever it is. And And so, yeah, they're like, okay, well, Brie is getting changed before she does the next thing. Do you mind if we just film you watching your match with Chris? I was just like, okay. Like, and then, you know, to me, this is how I would watch it.
You're watching it.
Yeah, for those of you who can't see what I'm doing, I would just be watching it and say without making a sound. But we want you to talk about it. Okay. So, yeah.
Well, it was funny because watching it too, and it's like I took the worst dragon screw in the world. I was like, oh, that's terrible. And no one probably noticed it but you and me.
Yeah,
it was
well,
so bad.
And so when you gave me the enziguri, I took a back bump, and I don't know.
Oh.
So you gave me an enziguri, and I took a back bump, and then Shad. After the match,
Shad Gaspard.
Oh, so after the match, he comes up to me, like, because we had to change and remember that different locker room, like,
the jobber locker room.
And so he said, hey, yeah, good stuff tonight, but you shouldn't take a back bump on an enziguri.
Listen, motherfucker, let me tell you a thing or two about wrestling, okay? He probably had no idea that you'd had 15 years experience or whatever it was. How was that coming out there? Like, they put you in NXT, and obviously you were with The Miz, and I mean, I think we've probably talked about it before, but it just, like, it seems so...
So, I thought it was a really cool opportunity, especially the stuff with The Miz, and what's really funny is that they never played this up. So they explained the show to us like this. We were going to have mentors, right? And so we'd have these mentors, and we would be their rookies, and that they would be training us in being in WWE. So I thought, great. I had some nicer gear. I'm not going to wear it. Mm. I'm going to wear the plainest gear possible. And I'm going to make my hair a bowl cut. Because this is what I was honestly thinking was that, like, okay, you put me with The Miz. He's going to teach me to be a star. Like, oh, sure, you can wrestle, but that doesn't matter here. You know what I mean? You need to be a star, whatever it is. So, and I like that idea. Miz liked that idea, like all this stuff. But they just never did it. So I just...
I never explained
it. Yeah, I just came out looking like a doofus every week. Like, because, like, before, like, when I was in Ring of Honor before that, I kind of had longer hair and my beard a little bit, you know, and I thought, oh, you know, I'm going to... make myself look like a real nerd. And then they just went with, oh, Daniel Bryan's just a nerd. That's his gimmick. So
see, that's true, like, a dedication.
Yeah.
I did that for the New Japan thing. I was like, I'd always watch guys like Tenryu and Choshu and those guys. And, like, I'm thinking, if I'm going to New Japan, I'm going to be, like, a crazy freaking heavyweight. So I gained 5 pounds.
Uh-huh.
Just, like, I wanted to be bigger. But, you know, they're very thick.
Yeah.
I'm thick anyways. I've never been, like, a back, you know,
right.
Chiseled guy.
Svelte. You've never been svelte.
Yeah. You know, but I felt like Robert De Niro in Raging Bull. Like, I'm trying to put on 5 pounds. I'm like, this is terrible.
Yeah.
When do you ever eat so much?
Right.
But I wanted a certain look for that match.
Uh-huh.
To really, and maybe it was just a I might be the only one that noticed, but it just felt like a different guy.
Yeah.
You know, that's cool that you did that. I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. So, I've always kind of thought in terms of that. Like, okay, because the look is a big part of the presentation, like we were just talking about before, as far as, like, my size. I don't necessarily need to be bigger, but if you're not going to be bigger, you need to have a certain presence about you or a certain thing that if you're small, how do you compete with big guys to a casual fan, right?
Yeah.
Like, all that kind of stuff. And so all that kind of stuff just interests me. And it's like, it's probably stuff that doesn't matter to the people who are booking WWE, but, like, to me it does. And so it's like, because if I were a fan, I'd be like, okay, I'd want to know why this person thinks that he can beat these people 50 pounds heavier than
him, or why he
can beat the Big Show or whatever it is. You know what I mean? And so
a lot of it's your style too, though, like a stronger style.
Yeah.
Very crisp.
Yeah.
You know, not stiff, but crisp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't shy away from the term stiff. I think it, like,
there's a difference between stiff and dangerous.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And it makes it, especially, like, I mean, a guy my size in WWE when I came in, a guy, like, you're a couple inches shorter. Not that it makes any difference, like we said, but when you have, like, Eddie in that Brock match, Eddie looked great, but he also worked so hard and so strong style. Benoit was the same.
Yeah.
He made it believe that this guy could kick somebody's ass, you know, 3 sizes bigger.
Yeah. It's interesting when you talk about, you know, how, like, when you came in, you were, like, a small guy.
Yeah.
Right. I was just talking with Shawn Michaels about that.
Wow.
And so, like, how he was always considered a small guy, like a really small guy. And, like, Sean's like 6 feet tall.
I know. And he was probably 225, 230 in muscle back then.
And then like, and then you think of like X-Pac, right? Who was like, oh, skinny, 1, 2, 3 kid and like really small. And like, he's like 6'2".
Yeah.
And like,
oh, I know.
And you just like, and it's just like, and Sean was talking about how, like, cause I was talking about Gargano, how I wanted Johnny Gargano up on SmackDown. And Sean, like, because you can see it, still part of him is like, how are these guys? Like, he,
Sean thinks that way.
It, it's not like, it's
no,
not
it's old.
That,
it's his mentality like, from the 80s.
His first thought is, this guy's 165 pounds, but then, but mentally, he's like, it doesn't matter. He connects with the fans and he's really good at what he does, right. You know, and so he'll get over. But, like, but it's still that.
It's the where they came in
from. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm still like that too. Like yeah. You know, you mentioned going to the gym and training. It's like I think you should at least still do that.
Yeah.
But there's so many guys that don't. And you got a few guys that like, you know, Kevin Owens, that's his gimmick.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of guys that just don't train and like, it blows my mind.
Yeah.
You know, it, oh, to me that was always part of it. You look like a star.
Yeah.
And as indie wrestling being as big as it is, you know, there's some guys that are really popular. They're like, oh my gosh, they look like, you know, like fans.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
yeah. The same way that Sean would say that or whatever. I remember Nash said that about Punk once. You look like a guy at the Waffle House that kissed my foot. I'm like, not really. I mean,
yeah.
Maybe compared to guys that you can't remember, at least Punk looks like a star.
Right, right. Yeah,
but
yeah.
There's guys that don't even look to anything like that.
Right. Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know, but I guess, like you said, people just don't care as much anymore like they used to.
Yeah, yeah. So
let's talk a little bit about Total Bellas as we wind down here. I want to talk a little bit about Cena's house and if that was, we mentioned it earlier, some of his weird rules.
Okay.
Can you tell me some of the weird rules?
I mean, it's just like, okay, things like you have to make your bed every morning and like, I forget what the rules are now, but it's just like no shoes in the house. Like, and you have to understand how opposite all of this is from the way Brie and I live. So like, so I would go out and garden barefoot, come in with dirty feet, and then like, okay, it's fine. We'll clean it up when we get to it. You know what I mean? But it's like if I have wood chips on my feet and they come in and then the dogs are running in and out and all that kind of stuff. And keep in mind, so Nicole and John had just gotten their French bulldog, Winston, who he was like a poop machine all over the place. But then we had Josie too, our French bulldog. And then Josie bit John while both Brie and I were away. And it's like, it was chaos. The whole thing was chaos. Like, yeah, I mean, I'm somebody who had never any interest in being a part of any reality show. That's not my deal. Like, I've never been part in any of the WWE movies or anything like that. Like, that's never been like an interest of mine or anything like that. This is all just because I married Brie. So it's like I've kind of been forced
you get
into
roped
it.
Into it. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's crazy because people ask me about it and like there are some things that I really don't like about it. There, I'm very concerned about our baby being filmed all the time. Like just getting this concept of people are filming us all the time. We're special or we're this or we're that or whatever it is. I think that's just like you see all the child stars who
right,
come up
right,
and being,
right.
being, you know, and that greatly, greatly concerns me. But that said, being a part of these reality shows has really benefited us. Like just we've gotten to do some really cool things. And then of course, financially and stuff for Brie, it's so good for them and getting their branding, you
brand
know, like
yeah.
All yeah, all that kind of stuff, which is not my deal either. But like it's but I mean, as far as like okay, how the world works now, like all that stuff is important.
It's beneficial,
so,
right?
Yeah,
right. Yeah, like, so you're too real to be on a reality show.
Yeah, yeah. So
the one that I saw was seeing is that you have to dress for dinner.
Yeah, oh, we did every week. We would do this dinner where we had to dress up, and it was just like.
That was real.
That's real. And it's like, and it was, I don't know. It's just not my thing. It's like, if I'm, I don't want to put on a suit ever. Mm-hmm. Like, why would I sit down with my family with a suit on That doesn't make any sense. Like, maybe we should have boxer short dinner where it's like everybody just shows up in their underwear.
Can
it's
we have
like,
plaid and corduroy dinner,
yeah. Or just show up in your PJs or whatever it is, you know, like casual. We'll have casual dinner night. Like,
Yeah,
another thing was that we all had to get together every morning and have coffee or something together. I mean, some of these things were just like he made these rules to make it more entertaining for the show, but they were legitimate rules. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know how John is. He's kind of like stern, you know? And so it's like, you know.
He's working most of the time too. You know?
He's always
got the little bit of, like I see him now, he's always wearing these ridiculously weird suits.
Uh-huh.
Like he just wears suits now all the time.
Yeah.
Like he'll go on to like, you know, whatever. Before it was always the jean shorts, hat. Uh-huh. He just decided one day I'm wearing suits every day.
Yeah.
All the time with like big giant like stripes on them and stuff like that.
It's like Vince kind of.
Kind of. Yeah. Wow. There you go. Last few questions. Now that you're back, what's your, I mean, I don't say overall goal, but like, what do you want to hope to accomplish with this run before you do, you know?
I'm a goalless person. People talk about the importance of setting goals and all that kind of stuff. My goals are to be a good father and to be a good husband and to enjoy my life for as long as I get to live it, right? Mm-hmm. And so, we never know what's going to happen from day to day and all that kind of stuff. And so it's crazy. Like, so I don't really have goals as far as that goes other than just my goal has always been this in wrestling. And people talk about like, being the best or doing whatever. I want to do this or I want to do that. I really just want to be the best that I can be in this thing that I love so much and do stuff that I'm proud of, right? Mm-hmm. So there were some matches that I had before I left that, I mean, it's not like anybody raves about them or anything like that, you know, but there are matches that I was very proud of, and I was proud of some of the things that I did that aren't the things that people would think, right? Like I had this match with Sheamus right before I had gotten my concussion, I was very proud of. And it was just like, I liked the way that it worked and the way that it looked and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, oh yeah, like this is how I like wrestling. So I guess the thing for me is doing the wrestling that I like doing, not just doing stuff just because or whatever, because I'm trying to get cheered or because I'm trying to get this position or whatever. But just enjoying it while I can, because now that it's been taken away from me, I know what it's like to lose it, right? So but I also feel I feel very fortunate right now because my personal life is so awesome. Like Bree and baby are just awesome, and I love being at home, and I love waking up. Like when the baby wakes up, when Birdie wakes up, the first thing that she comes in and does is she comes into bed with us and she just rolls around all over us. And it's just like, it's my favorite thing. And like I'm at home and constantly thinking like, wow, like I have this amazing life. And then now that I've gotten cleared to wrestle, it's like, wow, I get to do this thing that I really love to do again, that I didn't know if I was ever going to be able to do at this level, to where I'm going to be wrestling tomorrow in front of 65,000 or 70,000 people in Saudi Arabia.
I know.
I was in Louisville, Kentucky last night, right? And so it's like 75 years ago, there wasn't a person on this planet who had traveled from Louisville to Saudi Arabia in one day.
Right? Hey, where did you get the name Birdie?
So because everybody in my family, they were all B names. Yeah. So it was Buddy, Betty, Billy, Brian. Uh-huh. And so I so happened to marry Brianna. Uh-huh. And so the one thing that I asked was that we name our kids with B names. And so she kind of came up with the name Birdie. And it just felt right because it's kind of like old school English type name, but then also very nature inspired. And then her middle name is Joe, after Bree's grandfather, who she was very, very close with. So
I told you my great grandma's name was Birdie.
Yeah,
it was Birdie Irvin. Yeah. I remember like that's the only person I've ever heard named Birdie until your daughter. I was like, that's so crazy.
Yeah,
Birdie Irvin.
Yeah, Birdie Irvin doesn't sound nearly as good as Birdie Joe Danielson.
But this was back in the old days.
Yeah. So
like, last thing, how was it for you when you were gone, every show people doing the yes thing?
So it's weird because it's neat, right? But it's like it almost made me want to wrestle more, because it's so the point for me isn't to get a reaction. Like it gives me no joy to just walk out and get a reaction. What gives me joy is when people are already invested in you like that, like when people are already invested in you like that, then you can get better reactions while you're wrestling, while I'm doing the thing that I love. So I looked at it as like a wasted reaction. Like I go out there, and especially the times where I'd have to sit at ringside and watch matches, and I'd come out and people would be like, yes, yes, yes. And the crowd's, you know, great. And it feels good. But then you're just like, oh, this is being so wasted because we could transfer this into something more than just like, yay, we're excited to see this guy. We can transfer it into, okay,
let's get behind him.
Yeah, of course.
It's like your fan base never subsided. It never went away.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what I thought was cool. Even like at Fozzy shows, at the end of the show, like we do like a bound when I put my hand up. Bound, bound, bound. When I get to the point where both of them are in the air and we get to that, I always see people going, yes.
Yeah.
And then they realize, oh, we're not supposed to be doing yes. He's just going faster. They still think, they're still like, oh, this is where, does he want to lead a yes? Oh, no, right. We're moving to the next thing.
Well, do you know what's interesting to me? And I actually think this is cool, is that people use yes chants and have no idea who I am.
So
Hunter Pence, who was, when the San Francisco Giants won the World Series, he started doing it. He had just seen it from another sports team who was doing it and thought it was cool, and he started doing it.
Right.
But the idea, I think one of the things that's cool with the idea is that it's very actionable, and it spreads positivity, and that you can take it to things that have nothing to do with wrestling.
Yeah.
And so the yes chant will probably, not that I hope this, but the yes chant is so good for so many situations where you're happy about something or something that it's more than wrestling.
It's universal.
You see it in stuff, and it's not connected to me, but it's just taken, and it's just a way to show that you're excited about something.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really super cool. So yeah,
the coolest.
Yeah.
We're going to see it tomorrow with 65,000 people doing it at once.
Well, I always wonder, whenever we come to places like this, that I've never wrestled in Saudi Arabia. I wasn't here the last time they did it. I always wonder, like, are they actually WWE fans, or are they just like a couple?
Friends of the Prince?
Yeah. It was
weird, the show, because it sold out, but like 2 days earlier, it was like, oh, still lots of tickets. It's not selling well. And then suddenly it sold out.
Yeah.
And we get someone make a call, and like Sheikh Habib or whatever bought like 40,000 tickets.
Yeah.
And he's going to give them to all his friends.
And then now all these people are just, who have no concept. And then like, why is this very small man coming out here and throwing his arms in the air? I don't get it.
What does yes mean?
Yeah. Who is that big man? I like that big man. Yeah.
Kali will be the most over on all of us, as usual.
Yeah.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah,
welcome back. All right, Daniel Bryan is back. He's returned to everything, and he's just got the best of Big Cass at Backlash. He beat him. Going to be fun to see where he's headed, and thanks to Daniel for the time in Saudi Arabia. Always great to have him on Talk is Jericho. Always great to have you here on Talk is Jericho. And coming up Friday, Beatles Benante, with the Beatles Benante, part two. Charlie Benante of Anthrax discussing three new Beatles albums, track by track, talking all about the Fab Four, and we're joined by fellow Beatles fanatic, Sami Zayn. So there you go, with the Beatles Benante, part two. Sami Zayn, Chris Jericho, Charlie Benante talking all about the Beatles. I think you're going to love it. We'll see you on Friday. Until then, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy! Yes! 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 Yes!